Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dakota Digest, brought to you by South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Nate Weck, and thanks for joining me once again. Here's the top news and programming of SDPB for the week ending April 8th. The man who led a federal program offering visas in an exchange for foreign investment dollars in South Dakota faces criminal charges in Aberdeen. That city was home to a failed beef plant that used EB-5 money. As SDPB's Jennifer Jones reports, some Aberdeen residents say the charges were expected.
Aberdeen Mayor Mike Leveson says it wasn't a surprise that charges were brought against Yote Bolin. He says concern over the EB-5 scandal has faded for people in his community.
Because this isn't an Aberdeen story. This is a Washington, D.C. story and a peer story. This is a federal program administered by state officials. And it has really no more connection to Aberdeen than it does to any other city in the state.
The failed Northern Beef Packers plant had used EB-5 money, but Leveson says the failure was not because of the EB-5 scandal. The plant is up and running now under new management and a new name. NSU political science professor John Schaff says the imperative behind looking into the EB-5 problem had subsided once the new Angus plant began operating.
Certainly, if people are committing illegal acts, we want them prosecuted, but hopefully it can at least do something to bring some closure to this, maybe create the correct actions on the part of our state to make sure it doesn't happen again, and then we can move on from there, and hopefully the things that surround this particular scandal, namely the beef plant here in Aberdeen, can kind of move beyond the scandal. We can just get to having a successful beef plant for the city of Aberdeen and the area.
Schaff says with the new plant moving in the right direction, what was once a potential disaster could have a happy ending.
A Palestinian artist and graphic novelist's work is on display at the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology this month. As SDPB's China Lockett reports, the exhibition explores life in a Palestinian refugee camp.
Layla Abdelrazak is a Palestinian comic artist and author of the book Badawi. Abdelrazak uses the personal stories in her book to help readers understand the impact politics have on people at an individual level. She says it's important for Palestinians to write their own histories and tell their own narratives on the political situation.
In 1948, when the State of Israel was established, the Israeli army was going throughout Palestine, ethnically cleansing villages all over historic Palestine, and my family's village is one of the villages that was ethnically cleansed. So they committed a massacre in the village, and my family went to this refugee camp thinking that they would be able to return relatively soon.
Abdelrazak says her family still lives in the camp over 68 years later. She feels it's important to bring the conversation back to refugees and their right to return home. The book helps start this conversation, but Abdelrazak says it has generated some controversy.
A lot of people are able to learn a lot from it. I've heard people say that, like, you know, they were able to understand something more about Palestine. At the same time, it's surprising and always a reminder whenever I go to a different place, you often see, you know, the reality is that this idea that Palestinians deserve human rights, this idea that Palestinians, you know, should live in freedom, is not something, surprisingly, that you can take for granted. There's different reactions everywhere you go, and, like, sometimes you run up against something that shouldn't be controversial suddenly is controversial for some reason.
Abdelrazak's comic art exhibition is on display at the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology's Apex Gallery through April 29th.
A new rule from the U.S. Department of Labor changes the responsibilities of certain financial advisors. Some people, including U.S. Senator Mike Rounds, say the law puts a greater burden on Americans and limits available advice. Others say everyday investors likely won't see much of a difference. SDPB's Keely Boltina reports.
Fiduciaries are people charged with putting someone else's interests ahead of their own. That means financial fiduciaries must recommend money moves in clients' best interests. Lauren Kepsel teaches finance at Augustana University in Sioux Falls. He says the latest fiduciary regulation includes more professions.
A stockbroker, for example, was not a fiduciary. They were a salesperson. Generally, that group did not have the same fiduciary responsibilities as, say, your banker or your accountant might. Now, it was never clear in some of these areas, and part of the reasons for the new law is to make it clear the role of all financial advisors. They basically all now have the fiduciary responsibility.
Kepsel says financial advisors now must reveal how they're paid, including whether selling certain products earns them more cash.
If a stockbroker works for a specific company, he may prefer to sell you his company's products rather than a third party's products. And if he sells his company's products, he may get a higher compensation from his company than he would from a third-party company. So now when he is comparing two different options for you, he needs to also disclose that one option makes more money for him than the other.
He says that extra step is already common among professionals, so regular investors probably won't notice a change.
Most of our financial advisors try to be transparent, let us know how they're being paid, try to act in our best interest. But this protects us from those that didn't necessarily look at their role in that regard. But I think it's protecting us from the minority. I think most already, even though not legally required to do so, acted in that manner.
Kepsel says the new federal rule is rooted in transparency, so people have all the information they deserve to make the most educated decisions about their money.
On March 22nd, the South Dakota Supreme Court heard the appeal of a man convicted of kidnapping. On Thursday, April 7th, the court issued a quick turnaround opinion, reversing the conviction. SDPB's Victoria Wicks has more.
Jeremiah Leah was found guilty of kidnapping last year by a Minnehaha County jury. While extremely drunk, he grabbed a woman, walked her to the end of the block, and pushed her toward the street. At trial, the defense asked Second Circuit Judge Lawrence Long to include two instructions. One would have informed the jury that the state law on kidnapping requires a specific intent to cause injury or terror to the victim. The second would have told the jury that voluntary intoxication can negate that specific intent. Because Long found that kidnapping is a general intent crime, he refused to give those instructions. Public defender Bo Bluen argued that Long's refusal prejudiced Leah.
That did misinform the jury because it allowed them to interpret and to infer what Mr. Leah's purpose was simply through his actions and what resulted from those actions. But we know that specific intent requires more. It requires that special mental element above and beyond the intent to do the act.
The state argued that those jury instructions weren't necessary. Assistant Attorney General Patricia Archer told justices that Leah's attorney made those points to the jury during the trial process.
There's no prejudice here by the fact that these particular instructions that the defendant was seeking weren't given because of the totality of the instructions that were given covered it. And the defendant was still able to present his theory of defense in all respects through evidence and through argument.
The opinion says if the instructions had been given, the outcome of the trial would likely have been different. All five justices concurred in reversing the conviction. The state Supreme Court has never before determined whether kidnapping is a general or specific intent crime, so this opinion settles that question.
During this week's edition of Innovation, SDPB's Kara Hetland spoke with Dr. Julie Matheson, director of TIE, Technology and Innovation in Education. TIE is based in Rapid City but provides service across the state and region. In order to help schools and educators stay current with technology, there is an annual conference starting Sunday in Sioux Falls. This year is the 30th anniversary of the organization and is expanding to include a full spectrum of learning services.
We really started because schools started getting these big funny boxes with keyboards and floppy disks, and we actually hauled desktop computers around the state in order to help teachers be introduced to technology. And in the last 30 years, we've come a long way from that. Obviously, computers have changed drastically. There's all forms of computers, tablets, phones that help us access all of the information from the world. So our focus has really changed to helping teachers leverage all of those technologies to enable student learning in the best ways possible.
To hear the full interview regarding technology and innovation in education, visit us online at sdpb.org. The first annual state show choir competition will take place at Sioux Falls O'Gorman on Saturday, with 8 schools from around the state participating. We'll have event and award photos online after the event. Just visit us online, sdpb.org/showchoir. And that's going to do it for this week's edition of Dakota Digest. If you want to see additional programming from SDPB or see more radio news stories, including an update on the Trans-Canada League, visit us online at sdpb.org. Also, be sure to stay connected with us on social media by liking South Dakota Public Broadcasting on Facebook and by following our Twitter accounts. Our handles are at SODACPB, at SDPB News, at SDPB Sports, and at SDPB. I'm Nate Weck for South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Have a great weekend, everyone.